On the feature today, two kingdom theology. What is it and what are its implications?
One of my concerns is that we will not go boldly out and speak against social political issues, pressing issues like preborn human rights or euthanasia and human sexuality.
In the news, We Need a Law continues its parental consent campaign in Saskatchewan after the re-election of Premier Brad Wall there last week. Arguments in the Nova Scotia Appeals Court on the Trinity Western case. We're getting an inkling of what the new doctor-assisted suicide law might look like, and a clip from the Monk debate on immigration in Toronto earlier this month.
And now, Lighthouse News. Lighthouse News is a presentation of ARPA, the Association for Reform Political Action. Here's your host, Al Sebring.
They had a provincial election in Saskatchewan last week. Brad Wall's Saskatchewan party was re-elected with another big majority. Within days of the vote, We Need a Law's Mike Schutin was back in Regina, continuing to network and promote the parental notification law on the abortion issue. He says there's a bit of education to do now.
There are 14 new SAS party MLAs as well as 3 new NDP MLAs, but I don't suspect it's going to take very long to just bring them up to speed on what we're doing, and we'll be doing that over the course of the next 2 months here before the summer break, and then it's our hope that we can really make a push for this come the fall session of their legislature here in Regina.
Schutin says it's hard to know exactly how this will play out because things can change quickly on the political front.
I think it was one day after the election when National columnists are already talking about Brad Wall becoming the leader or running for the leadership of the Conservative Party. That would obviously play a big factor into whether or not his provincial government would want to take something like this on if their leader was going to jump up to the federal level. So there's always unknowns, but we're simply going to continue pushing the grassroots side of it, and I think it'll be an enjoyable process to try to convince the government now to do this relatively soon into this new 4-year mandate.
ARPA lawyer Andre Schutin was in Halifax last week presenting arguments in the Trinity Western Law School case. Nova Scotia's Barrister Society doesn't want to have to accept potential graduates from that proposed law school at TWU, citing the school's so-called community covenant, in which students and faculty agree that sexual expression can only legitimately take place within heterosexual marriage. The Barrister Society doesn't think that's inclusive enough. A lower court has already told those lawyers they're wrong, but the society is appealing that decision. The arguments were heard over 3 days last week in Halifax.
Most of the technical legal questions were dealt with by the two main parties, Trinity Western University and the Nova Scotia Barrister Society. The more interesting constitutional questions were dealt with also by those parties, but then also by the interveners. So there's a number of different constitutional rights that were at stake in this case, that are still at stake in this case. Section 2A, freedom of religion. Then there's also the argument of freedom of association, the right to be able to work with other people for a common cause together. And then the equality rights argument, and that's what ARPA Canada was able to focus on, the right not to be discriminated against by a state actor on the basis of religion.
Schutin says the hope is that the court will actually rule on the broader constitutional issues rather than just on the narrow technical arguments.
I hope that they do engage on the constitutional questions because those are the questions that impact the rest of us, right? If the Court of Appeal just focuses on those technical questions, then really the win is for Trinity Western alone, and we're left to fight these big fights another day with another case.
As to the timing of the judgment, that's never a sure thing. But Schutin says other lawyers in Nova Scotia have told him that the Court of Appeal there is usually pretty quick with its rulings.
I can't guarantee when that decision's going to come out, but it could be as early as 6 weeks, which would be wonderful if that did happen, because then we might have a solid win and a solid decision in our hands before we begin the two Court of Appeal appearances in Ontario and in BC the first and second week of June.
We're getting a bit of an inkling of what Ottawa's new law on doctor-assisted suicide might look like. A copy of the draft bill was leaked to the Canadian press late last week. It suggests that only competent adults should be eligible to receive a doctor's help to end their lives. That means the government would be rejecting a call to extend assisted dying to minors or people with conditions like dementia to make advance requests for medical help to die. It's not clear yet if psychological suffering or mental illness generally will be considered grounds for receiving doctor-assisted death. We'll have more on this on next week's program. We're less than a month away now from ARPA's biennial God and Government Conference in Ottawa. Nikki Pennings is helping to put this together. She says there's a lot of good stuff on the agenda.
We have Reverend Dr. Joe Boot, who will be speaking on Tuesday night at our evening banquet. That's our celebration banquet. We're going to have the presentation of our Salt and Light Volunteer of the Year Award. During the day, we have presentations by our ARPA staff. So we've got Mark Penninga, Colin Postma, Andre Schutten, Mike Schutten. As well, we're bringing in a woman named Ada Slavinsky, and she's going to be speaking on social media. We have a panel of three MPs. So that's going to be Arnold Viersen, Garnet Guinness, and Kathy Wagenthal. And then for the keynote lunch on Wednesday, we're going to have Tony Clement. So a really great lineup of speakers.
The deadline to register for the conference is this Friday. Nikki says spots are filling up very quickly. More details about the conference, including how to register, at the ARPA website. This happened a few weeks ago, but you might not have heard about it. The federal government has now formally shut down the Office of Religious Freedom that had been instituted by the previous Harper government. The decision was sealed when Parliament explicitly rejected a Conservative motion to keep that office open. Peace River Westlock MP Arnold Viersen spoke in favour of that motion.
Mr. Speaker, religious freedom is not a Liberal or a Conservative value. It is a Canadian value. I fully support this motion to renew the mandate of the Office of Religious Freedom. Not because I'm a Conservative, but because I'm Canadian. It is a Canadian value that I am proud of and I cherish. And as I noted earlier, Canada should make religious freedom one of our greatest exports. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Religious Freedom Ambassador Andrew Bennett has accepted a voluntary position with CARDIS to lead its efforts to promote religious freedoms. And finally, they held another monk debate in Toronto earlier this month. This time the topic was immigration, specifically with respect to the flood of Muslim immigration into Western countries. And it got heated. Arguing in favor of the present wave of immigrants were former UN Human Rights Commissioner Louise Arbour and historian Simon Sharma. On the con side, British politician Nigel Farage and syndicated columnist Mark Stein. The defining moment of the debate came when Arbour and Sharma criticized both Stein and Farage as being obsessed with sex because they had focused on sex crimes being committed by some refugees in Europe, and when Arbour called them newfound feminists. Mark Stein was withering in his response.
I made a decision tonight that I wasn't going to do funny stuff. I was going to be deadly serious. And I'm slightly amazed at our colleagues' ability to get big laughs on gang rape. Madame Arbour scoffs at the newfound feminists over here. I'm not much of a feminist, but I draw the line at the three-year-old getting raped and the seven-year-old getting gang raped in a basement. And when Simon tells us that we're all obsessed with sex, maybe we don't get enough action in the Toronto singles bars. I congratulate you on getting big laughs with that, Simon, and you, Louise, because if I'd known that, I'd be doing open night mic on gang rape at a comedy club. It isn't funny. It isn't funny.
We link to the full debate from the Lighthouse News homepage and also to an analysis of the event from National Post columnist Barbara Kay. Back with more after this.
The Molly Manners campaign has gained momentum with the introduction of Bill C-225, named Cassie and Molly's Law for the preborn girl Molly and her mother Cassie, who were tragically killed in December 2014. WeNeedALaw.ca has postcards supporting this bill you can order for free. They'll send you a pack of 25 cards and a list of 25 MPs. You can add a personal note to the card. Email Cassie at cassy@weneedalaw.ca to order a package today.
And we're back on the program. A little earlier in the show, we heard from Arnold Viersen, the MP for Peace River Westlock, that speech he gave in the Commons. Arnold Viersen will be in the Niagara region later this month, moderating an event at one of the Canadian Reformed churches there, dealing with Two Kingdoms theology. There's a couple of featured speakers there. One of them, most of our listeners will know, and that's Dr. Joe Boot from the Ezra Institute for Contemporary Christianity. The other is Dr. Matthew Tuniga. He's an assistant professor of moral theology at Calvin. What they're talking about is Two Kingdoms theology, which is a fairly new development in worldview in terms of how we engage the culture. And I've got one of the organizers of the event, Michael Zweep, on the line with me. Michael, welcome to the program.
Al, it's great to be on the program. Thanks for having me.
Let's start out with a bit of a definition, if we could, for folks who aren't familiar with this whole Two Kingdoms theology. What is it? What's the sort of basic train of thought? Where did it come from? That kind of thing.
Well, in my limited understanding, I understand that Two Kingdoms theology is a theological approach that distinguishes between two realms, the kingdom of the world and the kingdom of Christ. And while the kingdom of the world is under law, the kingdom of Christ is under grace. So Two Kingdoms theology has been associated with Augustine's distinction between the city of God and the city of man, or the Catholic distinction between nature and grace, or even the Lutheran distinction between law and grace. So as followers of Christ, we have a dual citizenship in the world and in heaven, and there's a tension the Church has wrestled with there in every age. And unlike the Kuyperian reformational approach that many of us are familiar with, that calls for redemption of every square inch of creation, Two Kingdoms theology would restrict the redeeming work of Christ to the Church and the means of grace, so the proclamation of the Word, administration of the sacraments. So while a Kuyperian view would promote the lordship and redemption of Christ in politics and economics, education, and the arts, Two Kingdoms as a view would restrict the redeeming work of God to the kingdom of Christ, to the spirituality of the Church. And in terms of a bit of background in Reform circles, Two Kingdoms theology is often advocated by a number of prominent theologians associated with Westminster Seminary, California, including Dr. Michael Horton, who, by the way, had a very compelling piece in Christianity Today recently on the theology of Donald Trump, and as well as our keynote speaker, who's often been seen as sympathetic to Two Kingdoms theology, and that's Dr. Matthew Tuninga. And he's a graduate of Westminster.
So why is this important? I mean, it's interesting for theologians, but is this one of those, you know, how many angels fit on the head of a pin thing, or does it have more concrete implications?
I think it is a really important issue. There has been some curiosity in Niagara here, especially being a very active area in terms of cultural engagement within the confessional Reformed community. This is a hub for Christian education, strong presence by the Christian Heritage Party here. We have a very strong local chapter of ARPA Niagara, as well as, you know, some of the founders of Redeemer University College and other educational institutions that really promote a Kuyperian view. So I think the concern is that how will this affect cultural engagement, Two Kingdoms theology? What are the implications for how we engage with our culture? I think there's a sense that, hey, we've lost the cultural war, so let's just be more content with the more limited mandate of the Church. I think there's some reaction to this utopian idealism and maybe being overly politically active in the Church. Yet, you know, one of my concerns is that we will not then therefore go boldly out and speak against social political issues, pressing issues like preborn human rights or euthanasia and human sexuality. So in a Berean spirit, we just want to host a dialogue between two respective authorities on Two Kingdoms theology and the Kuyperian reformational approach. And I think it's important because it means how will we engage our culture? Is it just through the Church and there's the risk of being silent maybe, or are we going to speak about our faith in the public square?
You know, Dr. Tuninga, as part of his examination for his position at Calvin, he made the point that we've lost the culture war. We live in a post-Christian society, so let's just hunker down and be the Church.
Yeah, and it's a good point, and it was a very compelling point. I think there's been some criticism in the past, especially with the Lutheran view of law and gospel, during the Second World War, and some critics have mentioned the Holocaust, and why was the Church, specifically the Lutheran Church, the Church in Germany, silent on the Holocaust? Of course, the exception is Dietrich Bonhoeffer, who is a champion for human rights and went back to Germany. And also, I think there's some criticism of what happened in the U.S. South with issues of slavery. Was the Church maybe was silent? And some people have implicated Two Kingdom theology, where what we do in the Church is separate from what happens in culture. We can't redeem culture, so let's not get too involved. I guess there's a legitimate concern that we don't want to politicize the Church and, you know, have social activism as a distraction from the gospel. But we're called to be salt and light, witnesses of the Lord, and it's not just reserved for glory in heaven, but for earthly good right now.
Thursday, April 28th at the Spring Creek Canadian Reformed Church in Vineland. Michael, if folks want more details, how do they get a hold of you?
Yes, just search Two Kingdoms Theology and Culture. We've got a Facebook event. You can also email me for more details at mzwiep@hotmail.com, or you can call us at 905-892-9000. 9160 to get more details about the event.
Sure, we're out of time. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Al. Have a great day.
This has been Lighthouse News, delivering news and commentaries on today's current events to equip Christians for their task in the public square. Questions or feedback? You can leave us an audio comment by clicking on the answering machine button at the top of the Lighthouse News homepage, or you can send us an email, info@arpacanada.ca. Be sure to join us again next week for another edition of Lighthouse News.